and welcome to the Ashley Webster Experience. Special guest today, we have Mike Plant. He is president and CEO of the Atlanta Braves Development Company. Do I have that
correct,
right, Mike?
You do.
That's
yeah.
a heck of a title.
It is.
And there's a lot going on with the Atlanta Braves these days. Not only have they had a great season, they're in the playoffs, and who knows where that's going, but they have this whole new development. When I lived in Asheville, I used to go down to Atlanta a lot, as I was telling you, and Turner Field.
Yeah.
Infamous place. Famous. I don't want to say infamous. But for so long, you were at Turner Field. Why did you make the move to SunTrust Park?
So I have a connection through the Olympic Games with Turner Field because it was the Olympic Stadium for the 96 games, and I was on the board for 7 years, and certainly saw great Olympic champions and gold medals won there, and then it was one of the great stories of then transferring that stadium and modifying it over a six-month period into a new baseball stadium for us. And we were there for 20 years, tons of history, great memories, won championships there. But we got to a point where we were about four years in 2011 from our lease that was going to expire. Mm-hmm. Like any 20-year-old facility, it needs some capital infrastructure, some improvements. We didn't own it. The city did. And sat down with the mayor and said, look, we want to do more than just 81, hopefully 91 games a year.
Right.
We want to build a destination. We want to transform this area instead of a ballpark and just 40 acres of parking lot. And long story short, over a period of time, we made more steps backwards than forwards, and so ended up pursuing another opportunity and really kind of pulled a miracle out with our relationship with Cobb County.
And, yeah, I was going to say Cobb County, you now have the Battery Atlanta.
Correct.
Which is not only the ballpark, it's a lot of other entities in this space. Explain to me.
Yeah, so our vision was to create a 365-day environment and destination and really a legacy in transforming an area 10 miles from downtown. Mm-hmm. Believe it or not, majority of our fan base lives outside the perimeter, so Atlanta's a little different and we were not really in downtown. We were a mile disconnected from downtown. Mm-hmm. So we moved closer to our core fan base, but it was never about just building a new $672 million baseball stadium. It was about building and now eventually it'll be a $1 billion mixed-use development. So it's got residential units. We've got 40 different retail shops, including 22 restaurants, two hotels, an Omni Hotel, an Aloft Hotel that we're building.
Wow.
Got 400,000 square feet of current office. We're adding another 600,000 square feet. So it'll be a million square feet of office. A concert hall that's got 50 concerts a year. So it's becoming the place that people go to. We'll have about 3 million visitors that'll come through there this year.
As always, Mike, with these things, how do you pay for it? How was it paid for?
Yeah, so, big separation between SunTrust Park, the ballpark, and the mixed-use development.
Right.
When I sat down with the county and really negotiated this public-private partnership, I don't feel bold about saying that this goes down in history today as the greatest example of public-private partnership that has a return on investment to a government entity.
To the taxpayers.
To the taxpayers. Because they're a participant in helping to fund at $300 million the ballpark. The Braves and a couple partners put up the $1 billion now to build the mixed-use development. Ballpark standing alone, stadium standing alone, public-private partnerships, they don't pencil out because mm-hmm. they're tax-exempt entities that own it. So you have to have this mixed-use development, which was always part of our plan. And just recently, now that we have hard data, hard numbers, we know it because we control it all, we own it all.
Right.
This second year of operation, our net value to Cobb County and the schools is $19 million.
So that's a $19 million that goes back into the county and
back
the schools.
Back into the county coffers, and the schools are the biggest winners at about $14, $15 million. And like I said, the numbers don't lie. We have all the data. We know what gets sold there. We know the property taxes we're paying, and we're now the largest property tax.
That's really amazing, because normally these things never work out on the side of the city, that it sounds good in theory, but never quite works out.
Right. And, the city, for example, had a projection of $8.6 million a year that the general fund was going to pay for their debt service on the $300 million.
Right.
That's already in second year down to $4.5 million because the other buckets are over-indexing, hotel hotel motel tax. We drive over 100,000 hotel nights in that Cumberland submarket. So
whenever I think of Atlanta, I think of traffic jams. I got to say, I mean, it's just one of those things. It's a city that you drive through. Many people live there. The morning commute, the evening commute is a nightmare. How is it traffic wise to get to and from this?
So there were two things when we made this announcement, and it reminds me of the 19 Olympic Games I've been to: money and traffic. So that's what everyone's like, oh, my God, don't bring that here.
Right.
We dealt with that with this project, obviously. From a traffic standpoint, we knew how important controlling and managing that traffic was. Number one reason people didn't go to games at Turner Field was they were not going to deal with the traffic. Go home after work, get your family, friends, and then get back down in the mosh pit, I called it. So we had a little bit of luck in this, that 90-acre site at 75 and 285 that we ended up buying.
Right.
The unluck was three pipelines, gas pipelines that went through it. We had to relocate those around the perimeter of the site, but that's why the site was available. But also, the state had already approved a $900 million managed lane project before we made the announcement that we bought the site. That opened 4 weeks ago. They're calling it the magic carpet ride. Two lanes in the morning and two lanes out at night, and it's been fantastic.
Terrific.
The governor, the county, all of us working together had another $100 million of transportation improvements right around the site, $40 million of pedestrian bridges to get rid of conflict with cars. And from our very first game, traffic has never been an issue one time. It's actually worked.
That's incredible.
It exceeded everyone's expectations.
Highly unusual for Atlanta.
It is.
But
well, the other thing we did is we moved our game starts to 7:30.
Ah.
So, again, we took data and said, look at the loads from 5:30, 6:30. They just keep getting less and less. So better access, 6,000 more parking spaces than we had at Turner Field with 9,000 less seats. So we knew parking was always a problem. So don't move your problems, down the road, up the road, and that's what we did.
So you have commercial, you have commercial offices, you have restaurants, you have a movie or a concert venue.
We do.
You have residential as well.
We do. We have 531 residential units.
And are they sold out or selling out?
They're apartments. They're not condos, but we're 94% leased, and we opened the last units just last September. And
if you're a Braves fan, what a location.
Yeah, we will. Like I said, we'll drive 3 million people there for non-baseball this whole year. Last, Christmas, 6 weeks, we had an ice rink in our plaza. We have a huge plaza that has about 5,000 people. We play our, playoff games and that. It's loaded with people. It's become a sense of, a sense of place and, once again, a true destination.
You mentioned that the capacity of the new ballpark is almost, 10,000 less than Turner Field?
It's close to it.
And has it been hard to get a ticket because the Braves have been great this season?
We sold out 15 games this year.
That's pretty good.
We actually have about 60,000 higher attendance this year than we did first year with the first year ballpark.
Huh.
Now, some of that is we have a better team. 4 years ago
they're selling the tickets themselves.
They are, yeah. We got a young team. It's an exciting team.
Yeah.
14 division championships. People got used to us winning, and it was kind of, hey, wake me up when you get to the World Series. And now we've got a lot of vibrant interest again.
Do you it's a unique model. Do you have people from other cities coming to you and saying, how did you accomplish this?
Yeah, so it's kind of interesting. We've had over 100 teams from all over the world, including cities, have come in the last 18 months to see what
just
we
to
built.
Do that. How did
just
you
to
do
see, because no one ever did it before. No one ever did it all at once. No one created this public private partnership structure where we were funding, almost $1 billion out of our equity and our debt to build this mixed use development, knowing that that's what was going to pay for the stadium. And then we built 2.5 million square feet in 30 months. That's how quick we went vertical, and it was one of the hardest things I know I've ever done in my life, but it worked.
Now, you're originally from Milwaukee,
correct?
Right?
Yeah.
So any torn loyalties when it comes to baseball?
The
Brewers are playing some great ball.
They are, and I tell my friends that they're my second favorite team.
Very diplomatic.
No, so true story.
Diplomatic.
Very true story. Yeah. My dad took me to my first baseball game in 1965 when I was 6 years old, and it was a Milwaukee Braves game.
Oh.
That was the first game I ever saw in person, and the next year they left for Atlanta.
Is that right?
And now I have a key role in
my first game ever of American baseball was I came to New York, saw the Yankees play the Brewers back in the day. Reggie Jackson hit two home runs. They won 9-1. So there you go.
Nice.
Yeah.
Brewers are pretty good this year.
Yeah,
they're
very good.
I wish them well. Those guys are all our friends. And but not too much luck.
Well, you know, there's been, you know, the eyes in the sports world has been around mostly football and basketball. Football with the NFL, with the kneeling, that's drawn a lot of attention. Their ratings have gone down.
Yeah.
Basketball is one of the fastest growing sports in the world. Their international model is really, really good.
Right.
And it seems like that the celebrity of the NBA athlete continues to rise.
Yeah.
But baseball will always be America's game.
Yeah.
What is your view of the state of baseball in America?
Well, if you look at the numbers, overall numbers, I mean, you're still looking at 75 million people a year going to games.
Mm-hmm.
That's a pretty good and impressive number.
Yeah.
We believe what you do. It is America's pastime. It's been around for a long, long time. One of the things that SunTrust Park and mainly the Battery have done for our business is, I said this earlier today, because of Ted Turner, I worked for Ted directly for 8 years, we're one of America's teams. Because TBS, you could watch Cubs and Braves everywhere in America.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, that was skewing a lot older, the audience, that because, you know, you're in Oklahoma and you're going to watch the Braves, you might be 80 years old and that's your team.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. For your business, you've got to find a way to connect, obviously, with younger generations. And the Battery drives a lot of young people to it. Our numbers continue to just go down as far as the medium age, which is good. And then connectivity. I mean, we have multi-terabit speed throughout the entire ballpark and the Battery that Comcast has put up. There's, it doesn't exist anywhere in North America. And so kids want to connect. They want to stay connected. It's a social experience for them. So we've had to look at our core fan base and say, what do we do to accommodate them? Fix the parking, fix the traffic, make sure we have a great destination that goes beyond baseball.
So what you're saying is that, you know, when you look at teams like the Rays and you see these empty stadiums, but yet, you know, you look at somewhere like the Cubs and you see these big state, you know, they're sold out. So it's polar opposites in some markets. But what you're saying for you guys, what you're doing is the fan experience at the game. That's what you're driving.
Absolutely. You know, winning helps everybody.
Sure.
Always.
When you're 25 games out in the middle of July, it's not a it's not a recipe for a good,
you know,
strong business.
A Mets fan
knows. Yeah. Okay. I'm sorry. I didn't want to bring it up. But no, winning helps a lot. But also creating that great destination that, you know, it's 12 minutes now to get home at the end of the game instead of an hour because you're in just massive traffic and that. So make things easier. Uber 5 years ago didn't exist.
Yeah.
We have thousands of drop-off and pickups a night. So there's a lot technology and the game's exciting and do things during the innings. And so there's a lot of things you have to do. And like I said, the Battery is huge. By 3 o'clock in the afternoon for a 7:30 game, the Battery starts flowing.
That's,
and it's just busy, and they're there. I know I have an apartment there. They're there till 2 o'clock in the morning.
I was going to ask you, do you get a place? Have you got a place
so
there?
I knew somebody.
Yourself.
So.
Hey, tell us, connect us. We might move down Atlanta.
But that means you live where you work, which is not always.
Well, I don't spend a lot of nights there. My kids are really good at finding their
way in there. But way to go, Dad.
My son works for the team, so he spends a lot
great.
Of he spends a lot of long nights there, too.
Completely off subject, but tell me about your Olympic history, Mike. I think this is fascinating.
Yeah, so, you know, I always tell people I did wear tights, but I went around in big circles. I was an Olympic speed skater.
I wondered where you were going with that.
Yeah, I was on the Olympic team in Lake Placid with Eric Heiden. My brother was on the team. And Eric won 5 gold medals, and I was just with Mike Iruzioni and Jack Callahan last night from the hockey
team. Miracle on Ice.
Yeah, we saw every one of the games, and, you know, those two guys reminded me last night. They said, you know, we won Sportsman of the Year, but we always told everyone Eric Heiden was the true Sportsman of the Year.
He was incredible.
Yeah, just
he was like the Mark Spitz of the speed skating.
Exactly. So, and I've been involved in the Olympic movement for 40 years of my life since then and traipsed around the world. And like I said, been in the last 19 Olympic Games, but it's been a good
and
career.
And you love it, obviously.
Yeah.
There are some people, I mean,
I do.
How can you not? It's the world's best competing.
Yeah, and, you know, I work in the sports business every day.
Yeah.
You know, I would never admit it, but, you know, some days I'm like, hey, I'd probably do this for free, you know. So you don't want to admit that too loudly.
You may want to edit that.
Don't tell your boss.
No, exactly. But no, you know, again, being part of this organization with the storied history we have with the Braves and now being part of taking a vision in an empty piece of property.
Seeing it come to fruition like that.
Yeah, and driving it and quarterbacking it and making it all work.
I'm always interested. What was Ted Turner like? He's such an interesting character. You worked with him for, what, 8 years,
you said? Yeah.
Was he difficult?
No, not for me. You know, Ted,
he had high standards.
Yep. And my first meeting with him, he wanted to know where this big project, the Goodwill Games that he created, Russia, U.S. And I came in and I blew the whole thing up. It was hemorrhaging $40 million every 4 years. And I didn't want to be part of that. And he asked me on a piece. He said, "Well, where are we at, pal?" And I showed him a blank piece of paper. I thought that might be the last day I work for. Because he said, "There's nothing on there." I said, "Exactly." And I went through 20 minutes of how I was going to change the whole thing, and there was dead silence.
Which is unnerving.
And that's why I thought, well, good thing I signed that 4-year contract, because I think I'm done. And he said, I said, "Look, I don't know what you wanted me to do here, but I wasn't going to come in here and BS you about what really this thing, where this thing's at."
Right.
And he looked at me and he said, "You know, I got enough people doing that around here already." And from that day, he and I got along just incredibly.
Just be honest.
Yeah.
That's what he wants.
And he let me do it. He let me do what I had to do to make the changes. Yeah. So it was really good.
So with the new – back to the Olympics, the Olympic Games are going to be coming to the U.S., but it's between the U.S., Mexico, and Canada.
No, so that's the World Cup.
I mean the World Cup.
Yes.
Sorry. Yeah. The World Cup. Yeah, I apologize.
Yeah.
The World Cup is coming to the three countries.
Correct.
Right? And when I first heard that, I was like, well, that sounds crazy because you're that's so much traveling for teams, right?
Yeah.
And with the Olympics and normally for the World Cup, or World Cup is a lot of times just a country, right?
Yeah.
But with the Olympics, it's usually just one city.
Yeah. Right.
Which, so everything's centrally based. What do you think of the World Cup coming to three countries, a whole continent? It seems kind of difficult to me.
One, it's an expanded format, remember?
Yeah.
They're expanding teams to 48.
Yes.
I think.
32
to 48.
Yeah.
And I think there's 10 games in Canada, 10 in Mexico, and the rest, the other 60 are all in the U.S. So. And, you know, you're talking to a baseball guy. We travel every 3 days. We get on an airplane. We go. They'll play a game on Monday, and they won't play again until Friday. So I think they have enough time to really acclimate. Travel's pretty easy now. And and it's a good way to spread the game. I mean, just like you said earlier, NBA's doing it. We're playing our first games in London next year.
Which is
baseball.
Amazing.
Yeah. So,
you got the NFL in London. Is it a good deal for a city? I remember Atlanta, of course, in 96, L.A. in 84. And can you make it a go of it? Because it's a very hard thing to host.
You have to control costs.
Yeah.
And what I've seen is the games become this catalyst to, like, fix up transportation.
Exactly.
And parks and schools,
like,
and
Athens,
telecommunications.
Yes.
And if you – I know the numbers. I know how they work. If you stick to putting on a 16-day event and a 12-day Paralympic – you can make the revenue and expense work.
Yeah, I think Peter Ubroth did a great job when he first stuck with LA.
So that is the model.
That was a model
in Salt Lake, and that was a model in Atlanta. We didn't promise that we were going to fix up highways and that.
Right.
It was like, we're going to put on a great world-class, worldwide sporting event here. Mm-hmm.
Fascinating.
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
well, you know, we've had Hugh Weber from the New Jersey Devils and the 76ers on present. And then we've had Al Guido, the president of the 49ers. And so, you know, one thing that we also spoke to them about was the same thing that we're talking to you about was, you know, their development side, how they're investing in other things. They have investments
in the community.
Investing in different companies. I mean, the 49ers had a whole, you know, like lab of investing in small business or technology.
Yeah.
And then they also have investments in soccer teams in England.
Right. Yep.
It seems like, you know, you guys with your community and the whole battery, it seems like that's the new, you know,
a finger in every pie almost.
It is. Yeah, I mean, you're if you just look at your team portfolio of revenue, it's pretty fixed.
Yeah.
It's called tickets and concessions and parking and local TV, radio, and sponsorship. I mean, there's not much more to it. So I always used to say in the old days, look, we probably make more money running a tool and die shop. I mean, you're just churning to just try to get to par every year.
Right.
You either own your television networks or you own your real estate and create a development, because those two things done right can provide enough or additional revenue to support what your ultimate mission is, and that's winning.
What about gambling rules are changing across the country? Certainly in New Jersey this area, but elsewhere, that could be a potential source of revenue.
Yeah, well,
big revenue.
Baseball's looking at it, obviously, and, you know, because of – some of the past indiscretions
sure,
of players.
Of course.
Mean, you've got to keep that kind of separate.
As with every sport.
Yes, exactly.
Not just baseball.
No,
but
exactly.
I hear what you're saying.
And
with
my Olympic hat on, I mean, it's the same thing. That
of course.
The IOC's been looking at that extensively, and soccer's had their issues.
They
and
have.
So,
yeah.
So I think if you can control the game and make sure that it's transparent and it's still ethical and you know, if you can find a way that it's just some jurisdiction around it, you know, it's probably going to happen. Well, I don't know when, but something will happen.
Right, but it could be more revenue.
Yeah,
it could be a lot more money. And with you guys, because it's not revenue share like the NFL, like there's not any cap with spending, it could be really big, you know, for certain teams, you know?
Yeah.
So it could really, really impact you guys more than any other sport.
Absolutely. And it's happening.
Yeah.
And right now you're not getting any piece of it.
Yeah.
So,
Well, so, you know, from a team perspective, could you see possibly down the road the possibility of a baseball team like the Braves embracing it and having, you know, services in-house for someone, a fan like us, to go there and just bet on the game while we're there?
You know, I think first it's going to have to be governed by the league. And that's why Commissioner Manfred's, you know, he's taken a pretty controlled, active stance on saying, look, no one's doing anything.
Yeah.
We're gonna work this together in a collaborative effort. Where we are in Cobb County, I don't see us, you know, running a small casino type or gambling operation there. Yeah. I think, you know, we said earlier today, in Georgia, there's some movement on casinos, which don't exist today, different than New Jersey and Vegas. But
very different.
You know, the world's changing. Mm-hmm. So.
You know, let me mention it. Completely off the subject, but when I first moved to this country, I moved to Los Angeles, and I used to go to Dodger games all the time. I kind of enjoyed them, but I found it fascinating coming from another culture that people would show up in the second or third inning. They come down, they're loaded down with food, they get themselves settled. We're now in maybe the bottom of the third. They turn around, there's Frank and Mary and the kids. They have a conversation with them. Before you know it, it's the seventh inning stretch, and before you know it, they've left because they want to beat the traffic.
Yeah.
I could not get past the fact that no one seemed to be really paying attention to what's going on the field. Now, out in the East here, the Yankees fans, they're a little more engaged.
Right.
Mm-hmm. How do you characterize the Atlanta Braves fans?
They're passionate.
Yeah.
They're emotional.
Because on the West Coast, it's a very, especially in L.A., just a whole different
thing. I think it's, you know, games are a social experience.
Yes, very
There's
much.
No doubt about it. And it creates this atmosphere and this forum to connect with, you know, corporate guests and your family and your friends.
Right, I get that.
Yeah, and so...
But there is a game going on.
There is a game going on. I'd say our fans are much more attentive to the game.
Yeah, pay attention.
So,
appreciate all the nuances of the game.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you need to pay attention, obviously, because things can happen quick. Now, fortunately, because of all this technology and the big screens and that, you don't miss as much anymore. But
do you see kids in all the stadiums now with their heads down looking at their phone? Is that just part of the deal?
Yeah, it's part of it. I mean, you have to provide that opportunity for them, or they're not coming.
Right.
I mean, they are connected. We all know that. I mean, I don't have to like it.
But kids especially.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's why there's nowhere in North America, as I said, that has multi-terabit of speed. It's so fast that 41,000 people could sit in that stadium, watch the game.
Think about that.
And they could all download a movie on their phone at the same time. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Last year we did, in our opening game, we did 30% more output than the Super Bowl in San Francisco that year, and it only used 3% of our total capacity.
No way.
That's how much horsepower we have. And that was all because of Comcast. Comcast is our partner. Comcast moved their southern headquarters there with 1,000 new employees.
Yeah, no,
it's fast. It's very fast. Yeah.
I want to ask about player development. Because the model in baseball seems to be the only one in America. I'm not talking about soccer. It's a little different than the way you guys do over in Europe. But in America, it seems like you guys are the only model that actually works with player development. And basketball, and the NBA is trying to expand into the G League now.
Yeah.
What's your view on the player development? Do you think, you know, when you look at how many minor league teams, it's like, wow, there's a million, it seems like, right? You know?
Yeah.
Do you think that you guys have it, you know, well thought? Do you think it's something that the NBA should copy? What's your thoughts of it?
You know, the progression, if you look at a player in Major League Baseball, it's unusual to have a Ronald Acuna or left fielder at 20 years old. I mean, those are the young superstars that have all this talent. You know, a lot of this, it's a 4 or 5 year process to either get out of college, get out of high school,
and go through the minor league system, the farm system.
The game changes so quickly at every level. And so all of us have, give or take, about 225, 230 players in our system, including our Dominican operations and then six levels of minor leagues. And, you know, I used to say to people, I think it's now up to 7% of all the kids drafted that go all the way through the minor leagues. Mm-hmm. Only 7% will ever put that major league uniform on.
Wow. So 93% don't
make it.
That's crazy.
No.
I lived in Helena, Montana. I've lived everywhere. So I lived in Helena, Montana.
Yeah.
And it was the Brewers farm team there.
Yeah, I remember
AAA.
That.
And when I was there in 1988, Gary Sheffield was playing for the Helena Brewers, hit four home runs in one game. I think it was against Lethbridge or some Sunshine team. But it just shows you that you can start at that level, work your way through, and become a superstar.
Absolutely.
But it doesn't happen, to your point, that often.
No. Yeah. No, those guys are three, four to an apartment.
And exactly.
They're on buses.
With no air conditioning or no heat.
Yeah,
especially when you go from college.
$25 a day for meal money.
It's funny because you go from college, like when you're playing in the SEC, where, you know, you get life handed to you. You know, when you're playing baseball in the SEC, it's like almost, it's very close to, not really, but, you know, it's a very nice lifestyle. And then you take a big step down from the minors in some points.
You do.
You know?
Yeah. That's, you got to love the game. You got to know what the game plan is.
Yeah.
You need to understand what the process is.
Yeah.
And then don't forget it once you get
it's
there.
It's kind of like us television folks. You know, you got to see how hard it is.
In the farm system.
Yeah.
Well, I'm working on it.
You said about the Dominican, your Dominican operation.
Yeah.
And, you know, when I mentioned earlier about how the NBA is expanding, you know, in Asia and Europe, but it seems like that is kind of the next frontier, or maybe it's already past the frontier stage with, you know, Central America, the Caribbean. Because, I mean, when you watch, you know, the World Baseball Classic or the Little League World Series.
Love the Little World.
That's the best.
Yeah. Fantastic.
Yeah.
That's, you know, it seems like the growth over there is, you know, exponential.
Yeah. It's like, I think 38% of the players come from outside the U.S. now.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a
I
big
didn't
chunk.
Realize almost 4 of 10.
Venezuela, Puerto Rico, Mexico, certainly the Dominican, Korea, Japan. Yeah. You're seeing.
What are they eating down there? What's
You know, it's a different culture.
Yeah.
And it's one of, here's an opportunity. I've got some talent, and I can go make myself,
focus.
Make my family better. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know? So they're pretty hungry. They're pretty hungry.
Do you see yourself the league growing or trying to expand more down there, because the popularity is, you know, rabid down there?
It is. I don't know. I don't see that enough infrastructure, you know, revenue and support to really have a team, you know, be able to compete.
Yeah,
but certainly an area rich in talent that you can.
Oh, absolutely.
You know,
yeah, absolutely.
Can find the
I
next
mean,
the
little
star.
Island is of Curacao. Andrew Jones.
Yeah. It's incredible.
I mean, Andrelton Simmons came from there. Ozzy Albies, Curacao. Mm-hmm. This little island.
Yeah,
all guys that have an incredible amount of talent. You know, so.
Well, Mike Plant, we're almost out of time. I just want to thank you for coming here. I'm really fascinated by what you put together there, and I'm really
thank you.
And it's really interesting that, as you mentioned, so many people from around.
All
over the world have come to you and said, how the heck did you do that?
Yeah, yeah. I get asked as well as, would I ever do it again? And I quickly say, no way. I mean, it's not like they don't even talk to my wife because she would say, no way. It was hard, but we built a great team of people. Everyone brought their A game every day. Everyone had a high standard of excellence. And everyone's got tons of pride because it is now the global leader.
We'll leave it there. And best of luck to the Braves, of course.
Thank you. Appreciate
it. Thanks a lot.
Nice
Mike
to be
Plant.
With you guys.
Good. Thank you so much. And thanks, everyone, for joining us. We'll see you back here next time.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network.
I'm Janice Dean, Fox News senior meteorologist. Be sure to subscribe to the Janice Dean Podcast at foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you listen to your podcasts. And don't forget to spread the sunshine.